The Skippy and Fanny Show is listener supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skippyandfanty, sign up for a 1 month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skippyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, yes. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skippy and Fanny Show, episode 144.
Torch of Cinema, Aragon. One part fantasy tropes, three part Star Wars cliches.
I don't know what I just drank. Anyway, I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Julia.
And today is Torture Cinema. Yay! We're reviewing Aragon, the, what would be the proper word? Acting challenged a fantasy film of 2006?
I think we're already getting into our likes and dislikes with that comment, Mr. Duke.
All right, so why don't we start by going over our drinks, and then we will just dive right in to our 5x5s. So I am drinking the same honey alcohol concoction, whatever, Tennessee something or other with honey. Yeah, and it's I don't have any chaser this time, so it's burning my throat. So that's what I'm drinking, Julia.
Sean.
What?
Last time you had to put cola in it, like, immediately.
I know. I'm drinking straight.
Why would you do that to yourself? I know it's called torture cinema, but there are limits.
I don't need an esophagus anyway.
Oh. Okay. I am drinking a pina colada in a nice blue chalice with a blue umbrella.
Which you can see, which you should see on Julia's Twitter feed, at least you could at the time of this recording.
Oh, it's on my Flickr page. We could put it on the, we could put a link in the show notes. Why not?
Yeah, I will make sure I will save that link right now.
And you know why it's blue?
Because of the movie?
In honor of Sapphira.
It's Sapphira in the movie. Who knows what the actual, it could be Zephyra. Who knows?
Yeah, whatever.
And Paul?
I am a creature of habit, so at my two co-hosts were pinned it down to one of two possibilities, and one of those possibilities is correct. I'm drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade again.
It's so strong.
what the lemonade? No, hopefully it won't be as goopy as last time with the Guinness.
No, a hard mics would be very lovely right now. This is so strong.
I think Sean's just feeling the burn of his honey alcohol.
How many bees died for you?
You know honey is supposed to be soothing on your throat.
I know, but it's not. You know what's weird? I told Paul this. When I gave my friend a little bit of this in a shot glass because she wanted to try it. And we kind of left it sitting there. Because she didn't finish it, so it just kind of left, like, the residue sitting there, like, a little bit of the liquid. And I left that for, like, a few days, and it dried out, and what was left behind was just pure honey.
Oh, so, my. Like, the alcohol evaporated off?
Yeah, and it just left behind just honey. I could have put it in my tea.
Huh.
It was really kind of cool, actually. So, but anyway. So who wants to do the description of hell? No? Okay, I'll do it. I'll do it. All right, I'll do the honors. All right, so Aragon is based on the book by Christopher Paolini, if you don't already know that. It is unfortunately not as good as the book, which happens occasionally. The basic plot is a farm boy, all the dragons have died off, and farm boy happens to be the guy who makes the egg want to hatch, and then he becomes the chosen one, and he and his trusty mentor, who is a like gruff, kind of angry, bitter, but also slightly sad with a little heart inside, Jeremy Irons, who they run off into the wilderness and running from like these weird things called Urgles. We'll get to that later. And other things, the Razak, which are these like, I don't know, they're like made of bugs and they run around and go, and they die really good. And they get in lots of trouble. They save the girl. And then there's a big battle at the end. And it's all because Galbatorix like is evil and he's played by John Malkovich. So, of course, he has to be evil because when does John Malkovich ever play a good guy?
I'd have to think about that one for a long while to figure out when the last time I saw a John Malkovich. Oh, Red. That's about the only movie I can think of that comes to mind where he played a protagonist.
Being John Malkovich?
Oh, the movie Red.
Oh, I haven't seen that. So, but I think that's basically the plot, right? It's basically just the Chosen One plot. There's an evil bad guy, and he's got to, even though he doesn't in this movie, he's supposed to go defeat the evil bad guy at some point.
It's a pretty thin skeleton of a plot.
It's basically every fantasy novel you've ever read, but it happens to have some dragons.
Yeah, do we know if they're ever going to make a second one?
My understanding is no, because financially it didn't.
That's not true. It was the 9th highest grossing fantasy film.
That doesn't mean anything.
It totally made back its budget in the box office.
I'll look
right. And then some. It was profitable. Like, it got bad reviews, but people went to see it.
According to Box Office Mojo, its production budget was $100 million. Domestically, it only made $75 million, but in foreign markets, it made $174. So while it did make a hefty profit of about $140 million, it's possible that because the domestic market was so small, and technically it was a loss in the domestic market, maybe that's why they're not doing it. Or because it's a hated movie and they don't want to make another, but that doesn't make any sense because they made two other Transformers movies and those were awful.
And a second G.I. Joe movie, and yeah.
Oh, no, don't mention no. No.
Sorry. Well, yeah, I know our listeners might make us watch those for Torch of Cinema, and that could be bad.
Just know that our list is actually getting short right now. I'm going to have to take suggestions eventually.
Oh, God.
So listeners, if you have suggestions for what you want to inflict on us, please visit the Skippy and Vanity webpage and let us know.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Aragorn, we probably should dive into this monumental epic with our likes and dislikes.
Yep, our 5x5s. So why don't we, we'll start with you this time, Paul, and we'll go with likes because I suspect our dislikes will have more meat to them. So what is your first like, Paul?
My first like is where they spent most of this production budget, and that's the dragons. Saphira looks really good. The few scenes where we get to see her fight other dragons, including that shadow dragon thingy at the end, are good. That's where they spent the money in this movie. Where did they spend $100 million? They spent it on the dragons, and the dragons look good. We have what's her name? Rachel Weisz as the voice of the dragon, but that's actually a slightly different like, but I'm just going to go with the look of the dragons as my first like.
Okay. Mine's related to this, although I need to correct you. They did not spend most of the budget on making the dragon. They spent a third on the dragon, a third on Jeremy Irons' alcohol, and then a third on everything else. Because there's no way he made it through this movie not drunk. I don't think so.
He did do the Dungeons and Dragons movie too, consider.
He may have been on like opium or something at that time. Because he was certainly overacting in that movie. Anyway, mine's related to this. I also agree that the dragon's really good, but this for me is a little bit, there's a little more detail because this is probably the one thing I like the most about the movie. So there's like two aspects of this. It's the first that they do a really good job rendering the dragon, which you kind of talked about. Like, the baby dragon looks really adorable, and the adult dragon's really well done in terms of all the rendering. But there's also the second component, which is that of all of the characters, the people, the actors in this movie, I think the dragon is the best actor. Because the amount of emotion that they managed to put into this dragon's face as it is being voiced by Rachel Weisz. It's, you know, you see the pain and you see the fear and the sadness and the joy and, you know, the snark and the, all of that is in this dragon's face, which is not a human. And yet they've managed to put so much of that in there that I actually came out of this movie. Like, there were moments in this movie when I actually had emotional impact for the dragon and not for any of the other characters. Like that moment when that shade bat mutant shadow thing bites Saphira and she cries out that like really painful cry and you can see the pain on her face. I got chills, which probably says a lot about the quality of everything else in this film. Or it just tells you that maybe they really did just put every attention they could into the dragon, because the dragon's really well done. I want a dragon. I want one.
That is actually my first like as well. My first like I always take notes ahead of time, so I have them written down. And my first like says, dragons cool. Because the dragons were really, really cool in this movie. And they were the best thing about the movie.
I agree. Yeah. We could basically just have this podcast be about our love of the dragon.
I actually, like, I really, I didn't get bored watching the movie because I enjoyed watching the dragon so much.
They do such a good job. For it's 2006. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they went full hog on the dragon. It's a pity the rest of the movie doesn't hold up, but I'm probably getting into dislikes.
Yeah, which we should, why don't we switch to that now?
Okay, I'm going to go with a relatively small dislike because there's so many other looming large ones that I'll ease us into the dislikes carefully. The opening narration is kind of fine at the beginning, but then it starts describing, telling us what's happening as it's happening on the screen.
Oh.
That's very bad story technique. Show, don't tell. I mean, oh, he's the farm boy, and he's about to have double attack, and we're seeing him hunting. We can figure out he's hunting.
That's what drives me nuts about that, is it's so painfully obvious what he's... Like, he walks out in the dark into the woods with a bow and arrow, as though we expect, like, he's going to go play bongos.
Meanwhile, in the forest, a young boy is hunting.
Like, because we couldn't have figured that out when he actually hunted.
I mean, the backstory... Part of the narration explaining how Galbatrox came to power. That's fine. But yeah, but telling us that he's going out hunting? No, it's stupid. It's bad.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. Like, and this isn't one of my dislikes, although it's bad. This is one of the things that it becomes... Like, there are tiers or levels of really awful that you can tell from the beginning of a fantasy movie. And the, like, the cream of the crop of the worst is when they have the written component on the screen... And then the narrator reads what's written on the screen for you, as though you we've had movies on this show where that was the case, as though we can't read the writing. So they read it for us and tell us what's happening instead of showing it. And then there's where they just kind of give you a narration of the backstory and then just kind of move on. And then that's kind of the best case. And then this case where they tell us the backstory and then they decide to tell us people doing things. Which is, like, in the middle of the worst. The worst would have been, like, the backstory is on the screen with text and then it reads it to us. Because moviegoers are illiterate, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. Julia, what about you?
Okay, so my first dislike is also going to be a fairly small one. And that is, so Saphira and Aragorn communicate via telepathy. And that looks like the dumbest thing ever. Like, every time Aragorn looks like he's telepathically communicating, his face gets the I'm dumber than usual look on it.
Yeah, I've got something related to this, but I'll let you finish.
Like, I'm sitting there thinking, like, and it took me a while to figure out that that's what they were doing. I thought first that they must actually be talking with their mouths, and then I'm looking at them, and I'm like, no, they're just looking really dumb. Like, the dragon still looks cool because it's a dragon, but this is the dumbest way of communicating ever.
It certainly doesn't... It works okay in the book, but it doesn't translate well to the screen.
So have you actually read the book, Sean?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, okay, I actually listened... The best version is to listen to the audiobook where the person does the voices, but maybe that's like the child in me that likes hearing the voices.
I love being read too, so
yeah,
that would work for me.
I heard the audio book too. It was actually one of the books we listened to with my friends on one of our trips out west.
So yeah. What did you guys think of the book?
Okay, well, I enjoyed the book. I like the book. I also recognize that it is basically just Star Wars with dragons.
Okay, well, I was just curious because I haven't read the books, so this is my first experience with this story at all.
Yeah, I would say that he's not the greatest writer, Paolini.
Well, he was 16.
He was a teenager. Yeah.
Although I will say for a teenager, he writes better than I would have expected. But there are certainly like where he's adopted tropes from earlier fantasy that it's clear that he probably needed more time to work on. But if you listen to the audiobook where the guy does the voices, it doesn't even really matter. It's a lot of fun that way.
I might have to check it out.
I mean, if you want to read it's the same basic story in the movie. It's just there's more stuff instead of like the first. Well, I'll get to that later, but yeah.
All right. So,
okay.
I'm passing it on.
Okay. Well, mine is semi-related to, it's not specific to the telepathy bit, but it is specific to the faces, which is that the subtitle of this movie should probably be people staring at things for extended periods of time.
Because That's so true.
Because I swear 25% of this movie involves someone literally just staring at something else. And it's almost always Aragorn looking bewildered at the world and just looking at things. Not talking. There's no dialogue. He just stares. Right. Looking confused, but mostly he just stares.
Yeah, I looked up the actor and found out that now he's on Downton Abbey. And I was like, wow, I didn't even recognize him.
He has grown up a little bit, yeah. It wouldn't be so bad if to go to a previous episode of this show if they knew how to smize, but they don't. Does nobody know what smizing is?
No.
Smiling with your eyes.
Smiling with your eyes. Tyra Banks, come on.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with her show.
You don't want to be. Don't read Model Land either. Worst fantasy novel ever written.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, people staring at things for extended periods of time. That's the movie. All right, shall we go back to likes?
Let's go back to likes.
Have at it, Paul.
Okay, my second like is Jeremy Irons' performance as Brom. Aside from Rachel Weisz's voice acting as Saphira, 90% of the decent acting in this movie, and there's not a lot I know, but 90% of what decent acting we get is from him.
Agreed.
Yes, his character is a gigantic walking, talking cliche, but at least he brought some energy to the role. I remember seeing a few years ago this animated GIF about this movie and captions of him saying, "Is anyone else going to act in this movie?" And it shows some of those blank looks from Aragorn and Arya and even John Malkovich and then the last one has Jeremy Irons just sighing and being upset, like, and it's true. I mean he acts, aside from Rachel Weisz, there's precious little passionate acting in his movie, and Jeremy Irons gets most of it. So yeah, Jeremy Irons.
I'll agree with you there. The best acting is in this. And of course, let's be honest, Brom's character is far more interesting than any of the other characters. Because he's the one with the really, like, tragic backstory. So, yeah, and let's face it, the one who deserves a new dragon is Brom, not this little pissant kid. But, I'm sorry, it's true. But, what do I know? My like is related to this.
Go ahead.
It's actually just Jeremy Irons' laugh. Because, like, overall, I like Irons in this. He's, you know, he's only so-so in parts, but he's working with pretty terrible material, so that's just normal. But there are the moments when he just laughs, and he does that, like, gruff, like, and it's always just, like, two laughs. It's, like, the two-note laugh. You know, it's like, ah-ha-ha. It's like, there's just two. And he does this all multiple times. He goes, ha-ha. And that's it. And it's just a beautiful laugh. And I think that he deserves some recognition for having brought that laugh to the world. You can tell I don't like this movie. It's just for my likes. They get worse. So, Julia?
Okay, so my second life, like my second life, that'll get into a later like. That's I'm saving that like for last. My second like is actually totally sincere, and that is that they had sensible armor for the female character.
They did.
She was wearing full on armor, and she knew how to fight, and her armor was like armor that you could move and fight in. And covered her, which is what armor is supposed to do, because it's shielding your body from, you know, sharp things.
I'll actually have something related to this later.
So I was really excited about that. I was also really excited that this movie really didn't actually overly sexualize most of the female characters.
That might have something to do with the fact there aren't that very many of them.
there actually weren't. I mean, it's a boy's own adventure story, but they could have actually not had any women, or they could have had like one who was a love interest. But instead, they had like quite a few. There was the fortune teller. There's the person who gives the egg to Aragorn to begin with, who I gather will be his love interest. There are women randomly seen, like there's in the mountain cave area where all the rebels are. There's the guy who runs it and his daughter. So, you know, like they actually did put women in when they didn't have to.
Yeah. Arya is the elf lady.
Yeah, right. Arya.
Yeah.
And she's the one who had the good armor.
Yeah. She's the one and the egg lady. Yeah.
And she wasn't super sexualized, which was awesome, because she could have been. She could so easily have been, you know, Keira Knightley in King Arthur or Slave Leia or whatever.
Yeah. Can I just get my other like, because this is so related to this anyway. Can I just do it?
Sure.
Okay. This is sincere too. It's fairly clear that she's going to be the love interest. I mean, that's obvious. The way he stares at her. Well, I mean, he stares at everything, but the way he stares at her, it's clear he thinks she's attractive, and he likes her.
Like, when he stares at her, his mouth opens at an angle that says love.
Sure, perhaps. But what's interesting is, you know, he does save her, and it's unfortunate she spends half the movie as like the damsel in distress kind of thing. But then the moment when he could have said to her, like, oh my gosh, girl, you are so hot, because I think they wanted Ed Spaliers to be kind of like the Ryan Gosling of fantasy, you know, the hey girl lines. Yeah. But what he says to her in that moment right before the battle is, he doesn't say you look like really hot or
you're
beautiful.
He says you look fit for battle.
Yeah, which I really
I was
like.
All about that. No, I was totally all about that. And I was also like, she was the damsel in distress in one sense. But I think that was actually really well mitigated by the fact that she was the whole reason he had an egg to begin with. And it wasn't because she was like wussy about it. She had stolen this thing. Like, she had infiltrated the king's castle, stolen his egg, and knew what it was, and was like, yeah, you caught me, Rumpelstiltskin, but I got this egg to where it's going, and I'm not even telling you where it is. And you could torture me all you want, and I don't care.
And there's some truth to that, too, with the fact that he manipulates her dream state in order to convince Aragorn to come after her. So there's – yeah, you're right. That really she doesn't – she's not really the damsel in distress, because she's not even supposed to be saved. I mean, it's effectively implied that – she sacrificed herself. She's willing to die for this.
Yeah, basically.
Brom even says as much.
Yeah. He doesn't listen to Brom, but that's because he's a pissant kid. Learned nothing on being on the farm, that's for sure. Anyway, so yeah, so he says fit for battle, and I just really like that. I thought that was... It could have been just another cliche, like, oh my god, you're so hot, I like you. But
no,
he never says that.
I was
that.
Expecting that, and instead he was totally like, you look fit for battle. And I was like, all right. That's true.
You would also possibly like the second book, because it actually addresses the fact that he is interested in her as a love interest, and it doesn't go his way. So, and he has his little his moment where he doesn't understand. He's like, I don't understand. But he doesn't do the friend zone thing, so that's nice.
That is nice.
I don't remember. He might have done the friend zone thing. I don't know. Whatever. Let's move on.
All right. So I think we're at my second dislike. I'm not going to jump the tracks like Sean, that even though I do want to talk a bit about her, but I'll save that for the proper time. My second dislike of this movie There's too many goddamn night shots. It's difficult to see what's going on, especially since they're all combat or action related. We get bad lighting by torches. It's horrible cinematography. We can't figure out what's going on or why. We can't see what's going on. And when it's not night, half the time it's drab and desaturated. I mean, I cheer, and I'll get that to a like later, when we actually get to see bright sunshine. But half this movie is in the dark, and it's dark, and it's in the dark badly. And I rebel against that. Like, I like to see this battle, thank you. I just want to see shapes moving in the darkness, badly lit by torches. It's horrible.
Yeah, can I add to that the dragon vision was, like, much worse than regular vision?
Oh, yeah, the dragon vision.
Was it Shrivakus Ven?
Oh, yeah, Shrivakus Ven.
Shrivakus Ven! Yeah.
Drago vision.
It would have been, it was confusing because at first it's just like she sees things weird. And then it was, oh, okay, there's still like she can zoom and then she's got like infrared, which I guess is useful. But like, why didn't we just start from the infrared? But then I thought, oh, that's completely useless because if it's infrared, like the forest would be impossible because it would just be like a red blob. I don't understand this thing.
I just don't really understand why it all had to be like yellow and purple.
Yeah, it was they took the film and just ran it through a polarizer and got some weird colors and added the infrared. Like, yep, that's Drago vision. Shavaka's Ven. Bull crap.
Prisinger.
Prisinger. Oh, God, don't even get
Louise,
me
hail.
Don't even get me started on the magic. I got plenty of dislikes as it is.
I like how you guys all know the words. I was just like, whatever. I'm not learning this nonsense language.
Prisinger!
So what's your second dislike, Sean?
Wait, did Julie already go?
No, I go last.
Oh, that's right, you go last. Okay, I'm going to go with one that I feel is really, I think it needs to be said. This is a really important point. And then it's that Jimon Hansu is totally wasted on this film.
Yes.
Okay, this is the guy from Blood Diamond. And if you've not seen Blood Diamond, I recommend it. Because Jimon Hansu should have won a freaking Oscar for that performance. He was amazing in that movie. And the guy can act. He's got chops. But then they put him in this film. They give him 8 lines as some guy with a weird ponytail and, like, funky dress.
You counted the lines?
I didn't count the exact lines. I'm making it up. And he gets to be in a couple battle scenes where he goes, oh, and slices people, which is nice, I guess. But that's it. We don't get to see any of his talent. He's supposed to be a character who's really important. I mean, he's Azhahad. He's the leader of the Varden. It's like he's kind of important. But they could have just cast some no-name here. They could have cast some random dude and just said, this is Azhahad. You don't know who he is as an actor, but it is. And that would have been done. But they cast Jimon Hansu, and they totally shafted him. And I was mad.
This actually ties into one of my likes.
Yeah, that actually ties into one of my likes, too. But
it does not obviate or refute your point there, Mr. Duke. He is wasted in the movie.
Well, so are all the good actors in this movie.
Yeah, that's a pretty target-rich environment.
Which gets pretty well into my second dislike.
Oh.
Go ahead.
John Malkovich is not even trying in this movie at all. Like, okay. It starts out and the narrator's like, King Galbatorix was suffering without his stone. And John Malkovich is like, I really suffer without my stone.
It's true.
Like, no emotion whatsoever. He was just like, this line sucks. I don't want to be reading it. I'm so not into this movie. I'm just doing this because I have to.
I need money for my gambling problems.
Something. I don't know.
It gets that gif I told you guys about. Even John Malkovich was in that gif just with the blank look. And Jeremy Irons just not.
John Malkovich is worse than any of the other actors in this movie as far as, like, just, like, you know he can act and he is not bothering.
Well, I disagree there. I don't think he can act, but...
Yeah, I've seen him do much better jobs than this.
That's true. In Con Air, he was better. Yeah. This is related to one of my other dislikes, but only because John Malkovich is in that dislike, but it's not really about him, so I'll save it for later.
Yeah, see, now, if you had been John Malkovich reading that line, you would have said, this gets into one of my other dislikes, but I will save that for later.
Don't forget that he would also say his lines really slow so that he got the point across.
You are correct.
Don't fail me again, Durza.
I think you put too much emotion into that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you over-emotioned that. You didn't quite get to the John Malkovich as Galbatrax level for that one.
Sorry.
Like as dumb as Aragorn looks when he's doing his telepathy, that's how John Malkovich sounds when he says his lines.
Do you think it's because Ed Spalier spends half the movie not only staring, but also like doing this weird lip pucker thing?
Yes, what the hell is with that?
Was he a model before? I don't understand where the lip pucker thing is. Let's look up. Hold on, we gotta know. Where does Ed Spalier's come from? Let's go to his IMDb page and see his trivia. He looks like a Muppet now. It's a little weird. Wow, he beat out 180,000 other applicants to win that role. That's nice to know. He was going to be Peter Pevensey in the Narnia series. Well, good thing he didn't destroy that. His favorite band is the Rolling Stones. That's useless. He supports the English football club Tottenham Hotspur. That's nice.
Is he a Belieber?
I don't know, but he could very well be.
Because, you know, Justin Bieber would hope so.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a completely different podcast, Julie, where we can make fun of what he did at Anne Frank's house. That's completely off on the subject of Aragorn entirely.
He was talking about what kind of bands Ed Spalier likes. How is that on topic?
Yeah, see, his favorite band is the Rolling Stones, but it says nothing about Justin Bieber. Although apparently he likes Led Zeppelin because he has a tattoo for Ramble On his left hip.
Okay.
Somebody who made this trivia list was like patrolling all of his interviews, like looking for those weird little personal details. And
somebody who put this trivia in has a giant crush on him.
Yeah.
And way too much time on their hands.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but it says nothing about where he got his lip pucker skill from. So we don't have any way to know where he developed this from or what its purpose was. So yeah, I'm sorry. Couldn't help you. But he's in Downton Abbey, so if you want to see his lip puckering, I'm sure he's developed the skill considerably.
No, he is in Downton Abbey, and I totally didn't recognize him in this movie. And then when I was looking up IMDb to see what other things people were in, I was like, oh, really?
Is he good in Downton Abbey?
I don't know. I think he's one of the footmen in the recent season, and like, I've seen him in Downton Abbey, but he didn't really make that much of an impression on me.
Well, that's better than the impression he gave in this.
Yeah. I'm like, he might be kind of supposed to be a little bit dumb in Downton Abbey. But the problem is that this latest season, they had like two footmen that they added and they're both blonde. And I just get them confused.
Well, he's getting semi-regular work, so clearly, yeah, there's something like, to the lip pucker.
He's not bad. Nobody in Downton Abbey is terrible. Like, they're all decent. But
to be fair, Aragorn was his first movie, so like, he may have sucked in it, but a lot of actors suck in their first movies.
Aragorn was his first movie, and also he was supposed to be a gormless farm boy.
Yeah.
Which he was, very.
And you know, that was in 2006, and he was born in 88, so what does that make him? It makes him...
No, he was actually like a teenager, yeah.
Yeah, so like, yeah, I mean, we're being kind of mean, but it's because he sucks in this movie.
Yeah, that said, I'm watching like the show that I'm watching all of in a row right now and have watched way too much of this week because I've been trying to pretend that all of this bombing stuff doesn't exist in Boston, is H2O Just Add Water, which is an Australian show about teenage girls who find out that they are actually mermaids. And it's like about teenagers, but clearly supposed to be family friendly because it's not actually very likely what the teenagers would do. However, I have to say all those teenagers who are in that show and the three girls that play the three main characters are actually teenagers at the time of filming are much better actors.
Well,
so okay. We're kind of being mean. On the other hand, we're kind of not because, yeah.
But he was born in Chichester? Chichester?
Colchester?
No, Chichester. Chichester.
Yep.
In England. Which I've never been there, but I've heard that they have very lovely springs.
They have a lip puckering contest every April 1st.
Oh, do they? Really? That's a wonderful thing. He must have won. That's how he beat those 180,000 people out.
That answers the question.
The right. More you know. You should put that into the trivia on IMDb.
Won the role for Aragorn because of his lip puckering skills.
He was discovered at a lip puckering contest in his native Chichester.
Yay for the lip pucker. Okay, where are we? Are we going to likes again?
Going to the third like.
Okay, well, I'm out this round, so it's just you two. So, Paul?
Right. We've mostly touched on this one already. She doesn't have a lot of acting to do because she's unconscious, bound, poisoned for most of the movie. But Sienna Guillory does look good in this movie, especially when she's actually wearing, as Julia pointed out, sensible armor. So, I would have hoped for more elven ears, but I appreciated her physical appearance in this movie. It's a very simple like, I know, but there it is.
I mean, are you saying that she was hot?
I'm saying she was hot.
Because she was totally hot. I mean, I will grant that. She was totally hot.
I'm saying she was hot.
Yeah, we agree.
I don't really get it, but okay. She's not my type.
That's okay. More for us.
That's good. You guys have at it. I don't know how that's going to work with the two of you.
I think like if we try to hit on her, she'll probably kill us because she's not only wearing sensible armor, but she knows how to fight really well.
Yeah, I wouldn't last long.
I'd be like, hey, baby. Oh, I've been killed. Oops.
Maybe she likes guys that aren't fighters, though.
I mean, I play mages, but that's not going to help. Procedure! Oh, wait. Sorry.
That was only a joke. Don't kill me.
Okay, so what are we, third like here?
Third like.
Yeah. My third like is, you kind of touched on this in your second dislike, Sean, because you were talking about the actor who plays the leader of the Varden. Is that what they're called? Varden?
Yeah, the Varden.
Yes.
Jimon Hunsu,
who is an example of the fact that there are, in fact, black people in the world.
Which is nice.
And I really appreciate it when fantasies actually include people who are non-white as, like, actual people in the world. And not only that, but he wasn't a villain.
The Varden are multi-ethnic, yes.
Yeah, they were multi-ethnic, and he was their leader, and he had an awesome-looking daughter who also seemed cool, like... So there was more than one black person. I think at the very beginning we see somebody who's black getting killed, and I was really worried at the beginning of the movie that was going to be like the one black person we see the whole movie long. And then I was really worried that the Varden were going to be all black, and it was going to be like there is a rebel race of black people. But no, like there are actually black people in the world who are not villains. They can exist. There weren't very many of them, but they were there, and I appreciated that.
Okay. This would be related to a dislike.
Yes. Well, we'll get to that.
Of course. Okay. Well, yeah, so I agree that it was nice that the good guys were like a multi-ethnic, multi-racial...
The Rainbow Coalition.
Sure, that would be one way to put it.
I mean, I wouldn't even mind if there were black bad guys, too. I like the fact that there can be black people in the world, and there can be just, like, non-white people.
Well, there's certainly a sense that both armies are multi-species, because, of course, the bad guys do include
different multi-species is fine, but if the humans are all white, then it's kind of still doing the same thing it always does.
Well, where white guys are the bad guys?
No, where white guys are the only people.
Oh, well, no, I just meant in terms of that there is a degree to which the armies consist of multiple on both sides. But of course that it's not integrated in with regards to Galbatorix, because there's a clear hierarchy established.
Yeah. But I mean, you get the impression that it's possible that there could be more black people in the world. There could be more other people of color in the world.
There could be. Who knows?
It is possible. It is like, it reminds me of, okay, so I was at a con once and I heard Cecilia Tan talking on a panel about her experience at a Harry Potter convention where she had met some young Asian girls who were dressed up in the Harry Potter like school robes with their house scarves and stuff. And she was really excited and she was like, hey, why are you like, what makes you love Harry Potter? And they were like, well, it was the first fantasy novel I read where I thought that I might actually exist in that world.
Huh.
And I'm like, hey, that is awesome. So I like it when people are represented.
Word. That's a really good feel good moment right now.
Group hug.
I like that. Group hug. Yeah. All right. Shall we go to our dislikes then?
Let's ruin the good moment
with badness.
Right. Third dislike. As I alluded to in our opening, this movie is Star Wars, the plot, replotted. I mean, we have Dragon Riders or Jedi, Brahm is Obi-Wan, Arya is Leia, Galbatrox is Vader/Palpatine, Farm Boy learns he has powers, is destined to overthrow the Empire, has to deal with Major bad guy, finds the power within him, noble sacrifice by Brahm, yada yada. It paints Star Wars by the numbers pretty hard. I mean, no offense to Christopher Paolini, he was a teenager, but he ripped off Star Wars a lot in this movie. And, well, it got kind of old, just like checking off the check boxes. Okay, and we're gonna have the big battle at the end with the enemy, with the rebel forces versus the imperial forces. Check, check, check. Yeah.
Except that there's more emotion and character development in the first Star Wars movie.
Well, I really can't wait to see what the Death Star is.
Well, it's the army, I guess, would just be the Death Star.
No,
Galbatorix is totally. He's totally building a Death Star.
Galbatorix's dragon is the Death Star.
He's building a fake volcano.
Well, it couldn't be the Death Star. It would have to be Durza, because the Death Star gets destroyed at the end of Star Wars. So in order for that to work in this case as a 1-to-1 remap, then it would have to be Durza.
Durza is Vader, I know. Okay, so it's not perfect, but.
No, I have to say the place where that's it, like really the most evident is the fact that apparently, as far as I can tell, Aragorn is channeling Luke Skywalker.
Oh God, yes. I mean,
like, and the acting is just as good.
Whiny farm boy, without a clue. I mean, consider his uncle dies and he has to run away from his home, his farm, and has to be dragged. It just paints it so much by the numbers.
I want to watch Star Wars now.
I mean, if you ran these movies side by side, you could see where the one is clearly aping the plot points of the other. We don't have a C-3PO and R2-D2, but other than that, I mean, it's pretty straight up.
I mean, I'll probably say more about this later.
Okay.
What is your dislike then, Julia?
Oh no, it's Sean's turn.
Oh, it's my turn. Sure. All right, let's have at this bad boy. Wait, are we on third? Yeah, we are on third.
We're on third.
Okay. I'm gonna go to my John Malkovich one, which is that I just hate every actor, including John Malkovich, in this film who has an American accent for no reason. And it's not because I have a problem with the American accent. I have a problem with inconsistency. There's no consistency with any of the accents. I mean, people will have American accents who live – no, don't bite me, cat. Don't. I'm looking at you, and I see, go play with the mouse. Go on. I'm just waiting for him to attack me while I'm not paying
attention.
That
is the longest country name ever.
Sorry. But there'll be it like, for example, okay, so Brom and Aragorn, like everybody in that town more or less has some version of a British accent, right? Which, whatever. Then they go to the other town and suddenly the accents change and there's like Americans in some parts of the same country, but there's no real reason why, because it's not clear that they come from like a different ethnic region where that accent would develop. And of course, we know that that's baloney, because our accent is fundamentally different from the British one because of all kinds of reasons. And it just doesn't. And then, of course, we get to the Varden, who I think we're supposed to assume that all of the peoples there are originally from the same general vicinity of everyone else, and in probably larger geographic space. But their accents make it appear as though they come from an entirely different part of the world that has been isolated linguistically from everything else because of, I mean, Jimon Hansu's accent. He's got a fairly clear African accent. I forget exactly where in Africa he's from. Is he Nigerian?
I don't know.
Well, this is why the Googles is so wonderful. But my this happens a lot in really bad fantasy movies where there just is no clear. He's from actually Benin. I don't know where that is, but
it's in West Africa. It's by Mali. It's not very far from Nigeria.
Okay. Right. So, but whether it's just not a clear reason for why people have different accents, they just do, as though this is just would naturally occur in a group. Like if us three, right, lived on an island, deserted island, and we raised children there, right, as though somehow some of them would talk like Jimon Hansu, some of them would talk like John Malkovich, and some of them would talk like Jeremy Irons. That's not true. That would not happen on a deserted island where everybody's concentrated in the same place. We would all develop roughly the same, similar accent. Just because of that kind of, it would be like a monoculture. So I don't understand it. I don't get it. And it drives me nuts. Just be consistent. They're either all Americans or they're all some version of British.
I gotta say that the British Isles contain a multitude of accents, and like, really over a short space you can go from one accent to a very different one, so it's possible theoretically. However, you are right that they seem to all be living in one place. Like, literally you can have people in the same village with wildly disparate accents for no reason.
Yeah, and even so, there are similarities between most of the British accents. Like, they're very they're differences, certainly, but there are certain commonalities that appear.
I don't know about that, Governor.
Maybe that's not true? Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong.
If you get a Cockney to talk to someone from the Northlands, they can hardly understand one another.
I don't know if that was actually
You should
Cockney.
Stop, Paul. Never, ever try to be British.
I don't know what that was, but it was
I will not be doing this for you.
That was worse
tomorrow,
than Dick Van Dyke. So what are we on?
Sweet.
Your dislike.
Yes, my third dislike. Okay, so my third dislike is the flip side of the there are a few black people in the world, is that again we have the same old tired story of the random white farm boy who is the chosen one and must save the world, including all the black people. Including, like, the black leader of the rebel forces who has had tons more battle experience and is theoretically probably a much better choice for saving the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree there. Aragorn's a moron.
Yeah, like, how is he better? How is he better than Jimon Hansu?
He's a dragon rider. I'm not saying I'm defending it. I'm just saying that's the in movie answer to your question.
But of course, but the really disturbing part of this though is that we're meant to assume that Jimon Hansu, his character Ajihad, has all this experience because he's been leading the Varden successfully and keeping themselves hidden as a rebel group from Galbatorix. And yet, when the Dragon Rider shows up, suddenly they're completely inept at mounting a proper defense against an invading army.
Oh, yeah, you're getting to one of my other dislikes.
And also, like, on top of that, the whole thing about the dragon is that, like, it chose who it went to. So, like, it chose its rider, and it was like, well, this farm boy has the best heart of everyone.
Well, we should probably take the dragon to maybe learn about character. Because, no, he's got the wrong heart. But
I don't really see how Aragorn has a better heart than the leader of the Varden.
Or even Braum. Who clearly has his head in all the right frickin' places.
Yeah, but apparently you can't get a second dragon once you lose your first.
Is that set in the movie?
No, but it's implied.
Screw that, man. He should get his own dragon.
Okay, so I have a question, because you guys have read the books, right?
I've read the first two.
I've heard the first one on audiobook. I vaguely remember a bit of the second, but okay.
Because I couldn't tell from watching the movie, and I wasn't sure how uncomfortable to be with it. Are all the dragons, like, the opposite gender of the riders?
No.
Okay.
There are some male... There have to be... Because the dragons are not...
Okay. Like, I just wanted to make sure, because I was sort of like, is it some sort of weird, creepy, like, mate thing? Because that's...
No, it... I believe Galbatorix's dragon is male.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not a, like, all right, that's cool then.
Yeah, and I...
Because they have that whole, like, we must be as one, and I'm like, how creepy is that?
It seems weird because, in particular, the two good guys we're dealing with have female dragons. Braum's dragon was female. By the way... You want to know what the name of the dragon from the book is? Because it's not said in the movie.
What?
Jarnunvosk.
Jarnunvosk.
Yeah, I'm probably pronouncing that poorly because the O has one of those little dot things on top. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of pseudo-Scandinavian words in Paulini's universe. I mean, if you didn't notice from the spells, Brisinger!
Again. Yeah, no, I got that. And from the copious umlauts.
Oh, well, this is weird. That's not actually his original dragon. No, that's his original dragon, but he had...
Did you get lost?
No, you can have multiple dragons. That was his first dragon. His dragon was killed. And that's what drove him mad. And his new dragon... he forced his new dragon to serve him using dark magic, and his new dragon is Shuriken. It is a male dragon.
See, that's not... See, that doesn't count. I mean, forcing a dragon to serve
You're talking about Galbatorix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't know if that actually counts as non-creepy, because then you can read into it that, like, he's the evil gay villain.
That's a bad subtext, and maybe not necessarily...
I know.
As I said,
I'm not clear on how freaked out to be about this. Like, maybe it's not actually creepy, or maybe it is. I just don't know.
In the books, it becomes clear that while the relationship with the dragons does complicate romantic relationships, it's expected that one is allowed to still have those relationships. Aragorn is not supposed to because he has a duty, and Saphira constantly reminds him that he's not supposed to be focusing on his hormones, essentially, because there's so much riding on him being focused. So there's an assumption that, yeah, you have a deeper connection with your dragon, but that doesn't mean you don't take a wife or a husband or, you know, whatever that means. You could be man. Well, I don't know about this world. Maybe they're against gay couples. I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, she rides him pretty hard when his hormones rise. Oh, God, that sounds so wrong. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
But you guys all knew what I meant.
Now we do. Oh, God.
Let's move on to my fourth like, shall we? Before I get myself even deeper.
I'm sorry, I had to bleach my brain.
Anyway, my fourth like of this movie... It's just some pretty Hungarian scenery when they're not filming it in the dark or desaturated or with Drago vision. There's actually some pretty Hungarian scenery that we see in this movie, even from the air. And I'm always a fan of pretty scenery, especially with mountains. So that's my fourth like.
Interesting. Well, my
I agree. That was it. Was pretty.
Is it just me or like if we actually later record a skit for this, that it should just be a commercial for Dragovision involving what's the guy's name? Maze. Billy Maze.
Billy Maze for Dragovision.
For Dragovision. Billy Maze here for Dragovision. Yeah.
Sometimes I just don't know how to find things.
Dragovision, it'll be good for you. I don't know. This is good. This is good. We should do it. Okay. Sorry, I got excited.
Right. Fourth like.
Whoa! What the hell are you doing, cat? I love forests.
Wait, is that that's it? You love forests? That's all.
I love trees, and there's so many trees, and I'm just happy for the trees.
Okay.
I do. Okay. Actually, there are a lot of really good forest scenes.
Yeah, I feel like that ties in with Paul's the Hungarian scenery is actually pretty great.
Yeah, if it's in Hungary, I want to go.
I find out where they filmed this stuff. They filmed it in Hungary. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Road trip. Yep. What are you doing? Stop. Okay. Go, Julia, before my cat takes over this show.
Okay, my fourth like is that... Robert Carlyle is a big bad villain in, like, the one that can be defeated in this particular arc.
Durza.
Yes, Durza. And so, like, he is, of course, the guy who played Begbie in Trainspotting and now plays Rumpelstiltskin / Mr. Gold in Once Upon a Time. And so, like, seeing him and being like, oh my god, it's Rumpel Begbie. I was pretty excited about that.
I do really like Robert Carlyle in this. He's overacting everything, but he's amusing. Except the part... Okay, it's not one of my dislikes, but I just gotta say it. When he starts randomly chanting in that the fake, stupid magic language... Yeah.
Ancient Elvish, yeah.
Yeah. Skuja Brogar Galadraken Bluken! Yeah.
Yeah, I will reserve any comments on that until later.
Drives me nuts. So, all right. So, are we good to go to our fourth dislike?
Yes.
Fourth dislike. We've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. I'll say it more plainly. The character of Aragorn, as portrayed by the actor and as by written, doesn't come off as a young hero to me. He comes off as a young, immature, idiotic prat. I would have loved this movie to have been from the point of view of just about any other character. Imagine this universe from the point of view of Bram or Arya or Saphira and have them as the point of view character, or even bloody Galbatrix. But no, we get everything from the point of view of this stupid, whiny farm boy kid with the actor who isn't acting or doesn't know how to act in this movie. He's unsympathetic. He whines all the time. And I'm supposed to sympathize with him as the hero? Hell no.
You know what makes that even worse, though? This film enables his character. Because, yes, he is stupid. He is selfish. He doesn't do the right things. He doesn't do the objectively correct thing to do in a given situation, considering his importance. But the way the story is written, it doesn't matter because he will never learn the lesson that he shouldn't do things that he does because he always succeeds when he does things he shouldn't do.
Yeah, he seriously needs it. Unfortunately, the book doesn't help either. He seriously needed to have a setback to get him to buy a clue that no, running off hot-cocked and doing what I want has bad consequences. He never lets them learn that lesson.
Right. The only consequence he has is the death of Brom, which in the book is perhaps more important. But the film, I mean, their relationship is so short. We never see that. It's not really...
Yeah.
They're kind of at odds with each other for half the damn time they're together. And then all of a sudden we're supposed to feel like there's some sort of deep connection. It's like in the book, he becomes more clearly a closer father figure or like a replacement father figure of sorts. But in the film, that's never apparent.
Yeah, that gets to another dislike of mine, but
okay.
I'll slide along to that. So we should probably go to your and Julia's fourth dislike. Well,
before we move on to Sean's dislike, I just want to add on to yours that I love the fact that when Aragorn starts out just being like, no, I have to do everything exactly my way, and I want to go back to my farmhouse and bury my uncle properly, and Brom's like, I'm going to set him on fire. Okay, we're done. Funeral for King.
Well, that goes back to the Jeremy Irons awesome thing besides
that was possibly my favorite moment in the movie was like, I want to bury him, and everybody being like, no.
This is stupid.
No, you are done.
But Brom is right about everything. He's just listen to the man. Just listen to him. All right, my fourth dislike?
Yes.
Okay, pacing. Pacing in this film is completely off. So in particular, the beginning. So this is all of the stuff that happens in about the first 20 minutes of the film. Okay, there's the big chase scene with the dragon egg, which Arya sends off to some faraway place. Aragorn finds the egg after going hunting. Aragorn's brother eventually leaves after one quick scene where they wrestle in this kind of weird, like, bizarre wrestling scene. I'm not sure what kind of wrestling that is.
Don't go there.
I'm just saying.
The slash writes itself.
Yes. Exactly. It's there. I'm sorry.
It's a slash, oh God.
Yeah, so that happens, right? We're supposed to feel bad about that. Then Aragorn goes to Braum and learns about the dragonses. Right, because the dragon, of course, at this point has come out, and like he's having his thing. He's like, I don't know what to do, and of course, Brom is being Brom. On top of that, evil things show up and kill the dragon, the Aragorn's uncle. Right, Aragorn then leaves with Brom, and then Brom proceeds to teach Aragorn a lesson about being an arrogant pig, which he never actually learns. All of this in the first 20 minutes of the movie. That's a lot of stuff. And the problem is most of this stuff we need time to develop we need to get a more clear sense that there's a better relationship between Aragorn and his brother. One wrestling scene doesn't do it.
And it's time for me to leave so I don't get shipped off to the army.
Right.
Bye, brother.
No big deal. I'll miss you, but not really, because I'm never going to mention you again in this entire movie.
Yeah, I always wondered what happened to the brother. Does he show up in later books?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Okay.
So at least there's that.
Yeah, he does show up. But he's basically in the movie. I don't remember if he's even mentioned in the first book again. I think he is. But in the movie, he's never mentioned. There's like nothing about him.
Yeah, after he walks out of that village, the brother might as well not exist.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Also, Aragorn's just a moron. I hate Aragorn. Like, in this movie in particular, he's just so dumb.
Well, I have to ask you, what kind of person gets the Internet Explorer logo tattooed on their hand?
I didn't think about that, but it kind of looks like it a little. That's adorable.
It's true.
Yeah. I want a dragon, though.
Well... We all want dragons, Sean.
I want my own Saphira.
I would not mind having my own Saphira. Saphira was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we would have some good times together. We'd go flying.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so my fourth dislike. Yeah, okay. So my fourth dislike is the flip side of my third like, which was that I was super excited to see Robert Carlyle in this, and then I was super disappointed because... The whole time, I kept waiting for him to be, like, super awesomely crack-up laughter-y in the way that, like, I don't know if you guys have watched Once Upon a Time at all.
No, unfortunately not.
Well, he plays, like, deranged Rumpelstiltskin in Once Upon a Time, and he's always being like, that's not how it works, dearie. And so I was waiting for him to cackle and do all sorts of weird stuff, and he didn't. Or, you know, maybe I'm just spoiled because I recently watched Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2 and I saw Michael Sheen with his amazing laugh. The best moment. Like, no, seriously. It's so great that somebody actually put it into a YouTube video. You can find this. It's like Michael Sheen's Twilight Laugh for 5 hours.
Yes.
5 hours straight of him being like, ah.
It's the best moment in that entire movie.
So I was waiting for like something awesome like that, and it never happened. And I was like, but I know Robert Carlyle is capable. Why didn't they use him?
Alcohol.
So that made me sad.
I mean, all of the good actors in this movie, they're not given anything to work with.
Yeah, like, but I just don't understand. He was a villain and everything. They totally could have had him be, like, unhinged laughing, but no.
Unhinged was, Blacko Fluken Flacken Tracker.
Yeah, no, and that did not do it for me at all. Because it just sounded ridiculous. It didn't sound ridiculous in a fun way. It just sounded stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to sound awesome. Brisinger!
What's the word for branch?
Oh, God, what is the word for branch?
I don't remember. I remember Brisinger.
Oh, look it up. Oh, here we go. Here we go. List of spells from the Inheritance Wiki.
I'm scared that this thing exists.
Geweister.
Geweister!
Yeah.
Yes, that's what they kept saying. Geweister!
Yep. Interesting that morte, which in most languages refers to death, is used to throw things such as axes from the nearby walls.
What?
Yeah, that's what Durza says when he throws the big axes in the hall and Durza's, like, weird box keep. Yeah.
Okay.
It's his Xbox, basically. He lives in a giant Xbox. Trayvam is tree. Risa is to levitate. That's nice. Oh my god, this is a really long...
Yeah, you don't need to read all the spells. It's okay.
Anori drammer aber sunda blaka it ator verligger.
Are we suddenly supposed to be like, what, possessed by demons?
Here we go, ready? This is what the word means. Because remember, in the magic language, the word is the thing. So when you want to create something, you say anori, which means create, drammer, which means dream or illusion, aber, which means of, Sunda means shadow, so we go create dream or illusion of shadow. Blaka means flapper, so of shadow flapper. So in total, it all means create an illusion of shadow flapper. That's what the words mean when Durza speaks his thing. Create an illusion of shadow flapper.
That sounds like a 20s gangster movie.
And there are other spells that are better. No, they're not. Never mind. I don't understand
right.
this.
So are we on to our last like?
Let's go. Like,
I'm kind of thin on last dislikes. My fifth like, I only came up with five, has already been mentioned. I appreciated that the Varden are multi-ethnic. They are a rainbow coalition. The resistance is colorblind. You have a black leader, although we get stupid farm boy taking leadership for no good reason, except the fact that he rides a dragon. That's no good reason for him to be a leader. But I mean, there's a clear diversity. There's elves. We don't see any dwarves here, but they're implied. There are. I mean, the Varden are a spectrum of peoples of all shapes, sizes, creeds, and whatnot, fighting against the good fight. And I appreciate they weren't just a bunch of redheaded Celts or pasty white dudes. I mean, we had men, we had women, as was pointed out before. I appreciated that actually felt realistic for a change. Yes, they have the accent problem, but at least they all didn't look exactly the same. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you got the sense that it was people from all over the place who kind of like banded together because they were the few people left of wherever they came from that didn't want this.
They're a band of brothers.
They're a band of brothers.
And sisters.
There are sisters there too. The Catholic Church is well represented.
I don't know that the Catholic Church had anything to do with this.
No, he's making, probably he's making for a nun the best. Joke.
It's a nun joke.
I'm aware.
Okay.
What's your fifth leg, Sean?
I had one earlier, but then it disappeared, so I'm just going to make one up. Which is actually minus the, like, Skluba Blaka Vlaka Bluku nonsense. I did like the final confrontation between Durza and Aragorn, because it wasn't too long, it wasn't too short, but it was just the right, like, the battle scene I thought was overall good, minus the fact that it's clear that the Vardin were not ever, like, even remotely prepared for this war, which is weird. But, like, you know, the use of the fire, but then even that final battle when Durza's, like, up on his, like, weird mutant bat shadow and is, like, throwing fireballs, and I'm like, yeah, that's awesome! And then they have, like, the battle and, like, they're biting each other. It's cool. I like that. I quite enjoyed that. I thought it was well done. Because they could have made it just really kind of anticlimactic and dumb, but no, Saphiric actually gets injured, and then there's actually a throwback in that scene where, you remember when earlier when he first, like, properly flies with the saddle and he's going to jump on her tail and he's afraid to do it, right. And then he does it, and then he does it, right? Yeah, I like that, so.
That's right.
Oh.
Chekhov's gun.
There you go, man.
Chekhov's tail.
Chekhov's tail.
So that's my fifth like. Yeah.
So at least you, Julia, for the fifth like.
Okay, so my fifth like is this movie felt rather like a video game. That it felt very clearly compartmentalized for different levels of you completing a certain quest and then fighting a certain battle and getting a cutscene and then on to the next battle/quest. And I appreciated that. I liked the fact that the music that went along with it was just like one step removed from actual 8-bit video game music. So I could really feel like I could actually think like, yeah, this is a lot like watching someone play Final Fantasy or The Legend of Zelda. This is pretty great.
And this is a like, wow. And
so like, I actually really enjoyed it though, because I was like, well, you know, this is a stupid, this it rips off the tropes of every other movie ever made. And every other video game and role-playing game and Dragonlance novel, like, it is a very much, you know what to expect. It's a boy going off on an adventure, and he's going to end up being the one who gets to save the world, and there's going to be some cool stuff along the way, and he's going to get into some scrapes or experience some fun things, and everything's going to be okay in the end. And it did that. It ticked all the boxes. It wasn't particularly original, but I enjoyed it the same way I enjoyed, like a category romance novel. Because I will occasionally read romance novels, and the thing that's really fun about romance novels is that if you want to read something where you want to kind of turn off your brain and not have to worry about anything, you read a romance novel and you know that the end is going to be that the two people who you see in the first chapter are going to get together and be in love. The end. So it's very relaxing, and I found that this movie was similarly very relaxing. And I did not know what kind of week I was going to have when I watched it, because I watched this last Sunday night. So this is before the marathon bombing happened and all this stuff. And for listeners who don't know, I do live in the Boston area, so I have had a very stressful week. We are recording this on the Friday that finally, like, the bombing suspect has been caught. But the last week has been very nerve-wracking for me. I didn't know at the time that I watched this movie that it would be. But, like, if I had to watch the movie during the week, I don't think it would have actually bothered me, because it wasn't – it was a very relaxing sort of, like, I know what's going to happen, and that's cool, and I don't mind. And it kind of feels like watching a video game, and it kind of feels like reading a Dragonlance novel. And I'm okay with that. Like, it's not great, but I kind of enjoy it.
Well, interestingly enough, the person who composed the music was Patrick Doyle, who...
Does he write music for video games?
Well, I can't tell because I don't know if any of these... Hold on, let me see if there's any soundtrack. I don't see anything that it jumps out to me as a video game. But he has done things, film scores for Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, various Kenneth Branagh films. He did the score for Brave. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Thor, a bunch of other stuff. Lots of stuff. Big movies, and, you know, Much Ado About Nothing, Henry V, some other stuff. So he's actually a good composer by a certain standard. Also interesting, there was a video game based on this, of course.
Of course there was. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why there wouldn't be.
That's another avenue for money making. Of course there's a video game.
Well, there wasn't one for Henry V in 1989, so.
Yeah.
I would love a
Shakespeare
video game.
Have you guys seen the Great Gatsby video game?
There's a Great Gatsby video game?
somebody made it up in the last few years. It's great. It's like in the style of the old Nintendo games.
Oh my god.
It's fantastic. Just Google it.
GreatGatsby.com.
Is that where it is?
Yeah, GreatGatsby.com.
Yeah, you can play it online. It's fantastic.
I'm literally downloading it right now.
Like there's like the first letter level is you just like basically punching out waiters at Gatsby's party. it's fantastic.
Oh my god, there's music.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
Oh my god, I want to play it.
Oh, wait till we hang up.
Yes, we need to finish the podcast, Sean.
Sorry, there's music and I got really excited. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, so anyway, all right, yeah, so good. Are we on final dislikes now?
I think we're on final dislikes.
All right, Paul, go for it.
I've got two of them, but I got to pick one. So I'll pick one I alluded to before. The sense of how much time passes in this movie is awful. I mean, in the book, they rightly give him weeks and months of time with Brahm and Aragorn together, getting him to build up their relationship, getting him to get from place to place. And so when Brahm finally dies, it actually means something. Not to mention they make intimations that things happen while they're going on this journey. In the movie, it feels like they walk for a couple of days from place to place, and okay, it's a couple of days to here, and it's a couple of days to the Varden. But then at the same time, we're supposed to... They make references, that people have heard about your story and what you've done all across the land already. And like, what? I mean, they just got there. I mean, the speed of this... And I've criticized this before, especially I think it was Season of the Witch. News and information does not travel that fast in a medieval fantasy world. It just does not. I mean, but if they'd spent weeks and months traveling along and doing stuff, then I could see people having a chance to hear about them. But if they're going to spend, it takes them 3 days to walk to this village and 4 days to the foothills and then a day or two and they're suddenly at this, Durza's castle and then back to the foothills again in a couple of days. There's not enough time for their stories and adventures to be heard throughout the land. It's completely and utterly wrong. They don't understand how long it takes to go anywhere in this movie.
Yeah, it did seem to all happen in like 1 week. And also there's a point where he goes and he's like, no, I've decided to go backtrack and go to the castle and save this girl. And Brum's like, that's a bad idea. And he's like, no, it's a great idea. He's like, but we have to get to the Varden. It's like, yeah, this will take like 2 hours.
I'll be there in no time.
And it does. It's like, woof, I'm there. Okay, let's go back.
And then Brahm dies in the most anticlimactic way ever.
Also, I did think about the Season of the Witch while I was watching this, because I was really waiting for someone to pull out a map like the map we saw in the Season of the Witch.
Well, there is that very murky, not quite a map thing that Galbatrix has. When I was disappointed, I could have had that as a dislike that we never actually get a proper look at that map. But I'm piling up my dislikes, and I could probably talk all night about them. So I should probably throw the ball to somebody else on dislikes.
Well, before we do though, I really want to know what the other dislike that you didn't say was.
Yeah. What was it, Paul?
The defense of the Varden. No offense to the Varden, but if I had years to hole up in the foothills waiting for Galbatrix to come up with an army, I could have come up with a goddamn better defense than they did. They just seemed to like not expect or understand what to do when a giant army comes up. I mean, they're sitting in, they're sitting behind this waterfall in the mountains. I would have had that shit all set up to roll rocks down on them. You halfway decent defense that could have destroyed any army coming up anywhere near the Varden if they had any clue of tactical planning or strategy. And they don't do any of that. They have this gigantic army. They let them waltz right into their camp. I mean, then you have Aragorn and Saphira breathing fire. Did you notice they set their entire town on fire in addition to the army? Horrible defense! My God in heaven!
Why did you pick this one? Clearly you're emotional about it.
I know. I just had too many, because I alluded to the other one before and I didn't want to disappoint our readers. But it's the most horrible defense ever. It's just like they waste all their advantages.
I don't even know if there was a defense. That's what I'm just not sure of. I think their only defense was, we have a wall of rock that goes in front of the waterfall. That's good enough.
Yeah, that's as far as I could tell all their defense was. Like, there's a wall here, it should be fine.
Yeah, just a couple guards in random places, even though we know the army's coming. No big deal.
I mean, if they had any halfway decent defenses, Galbatrox would have said, fuck that, I'm not going to go after the Varden because I'll get my army chewed up. Let them sit in the hills so the cows come home, and that would have been fine. But the defense they put up, Galbatrox could have taken about years ago. It should have.
And
there would have been a dragon there to help stop them.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So, good grief.
Also, can I just say that Galbatrox sounds like some sort of weird Borax-related hand soap? Or pesticide, I'm not really sure.
Is this another Billy Mays?
I'm not really sure. Yes, yes. Like,
Galbatrox hand soap!
Are you having trouble with germs? Use Galbatrox!
Guaranteed not to chafe your skin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we gotta do it. We're gonna have to do it.
Okay, Sean, what's your...
dislike.
I'm so happy right now. Okay. I think that we need to officially ban all instances in which the hero, during the climactic battle, uses a pithy quote just as he's killing the bad guy, particularly when such quotes harken back to things the villain said. So, as an example... After Aragorn stabs Durza in the heart because that's the only way he can kill a shade, right? He says two things. One, the greatest cliche of all time, which is, "This is for Brom." No, because Brom dead. And then, of course, he repeats his own version of the line that Durza said to him earlier. He says, "I expected more," but they're said side by side with no. Like, sense of, like, concept that these two things, you can't say them both. You get, like, one or the other. You can't have both of these. Right? Like, let's be honest. It just doesn't work. It's ridiculous. They're two completely different ideas. So you get one, like, final, like, I beat you line. It's either this is for Brom or it's I expected more.
You can't have both.
You can't have both. No. It's just selfish. He's sucking up screen time for no reason. Just to say two lines with, like, just ham-fisted. He just ham-fists the line. He's just the pathetic. Come on.
It's because he's the chosen one.
He doesn't get both. I'm sorry. That's not in the job description for chosen one.
Yeah, it's a psychic that gets the 50 quotes.
Right. The psychic can have all the quotes she damn well pleases.
Yeah, another dislike in this
that's
movie.
That's one of mine dislikes, actually. Can I go? Paul got an extra one. Can I have an extra one?
Yes, you can have an extra one.
Okay. Can I just say that she is the laziest psychic there has ever been?
Oh, my God.
Because when she sits there and she goes, "These are dragon knuckles, and I'm going to pour them out, and I'm going to do my thing." all she does is she's like goes and just like drops them on the table and goes, the bones tell me things. But it's like she doesn't even really look. They're not doing anything. They're just laying there.
So like, I think she's a pop star.
Yeah, she's Just Stone.
Yeah, so like, as far as I can tell, she's not there because she's an actress. She's there because she's a pop star.
I'm not concerned about her acting. I'm concerned about like the very idea that she's like rolling dragon knuckle bones as though they're somehow magic and they're telling her things. But she's not even really rolling them. She's just pouring them out of a bag.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it doesn't really matter what she does. She's just there so that there will be a cameo by a pop star. And I'm not saying like her acting ability is bad. I'm just saying like I don't think the people who made the movie care. I think they're just like, there, we have a pop star. Check.
I thought you were going to go with, I was actually more referring to Martok as a sidekick that wasn't.
Okay, so yeah, wait for it.
Go for it, Julia.
Okay.
You can have it.
So my fifth dislike, and I will open the floor to you guys to complain about Martok in as much detail as you would like after I get this off my chest, but okay, the ending, where... Like, there's been climactic, traumatic battle, and Aragorn thinks that Saphira is dead, and he has been knocked out and, like, is being kind of, like, nursed back to health, and he wakes up, and the last thing he remembers is pretty much being sure his dragon is dead, and being super, like, defeated in battle or whatever, and he's like, what's going on? I'm alive. Where's Saphira? And Murtagh looks at him and he's like, she's... And he kind of gets this look like she's dead, you know? And
he says, and some friends can't be replaced.
Yeah, friends can't be replaced, which is totally like, I'm sorry, like, your friend is dead. And Aragorn's like, oh my god, like, my dragon, she's dead. And he's like, gotcha! She's alive! Like, no, that is not the time that you gotcha someone.
No,
what the
really
hell
kind
is
of
that?
Douchey.
It is douchey.
But
I open up the floor for you to complain about Murtagh as his sidekick or not sidekick.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Ready? Ready for this? I know who Murtagh is, and I'm gonna ruin it for everybody. Murtagh is actually Aragorn's brother. Aragorn is born to Morzan. And so later on, Murtagh is actually very important because Galbatorix literally forces Murtagh to hatch another dragon and uses Murtagh against Aragorn later. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Talk about family dynamics.
I don't really think I followed that at all, but I'm cool with that. That's cool.
It turns out that Aragorn's real father is Morzan.
Who is Morzan?
It's the guy who killed Brom's dragon.
Okay. Yeah, see, like, you guys are all expecting me to know names, and I'm just like, I don't even know who these people are.
The douchebag that killed Brom's dragon, who turned over to the dark side, as it were, that's Morzan, and that turns out to actually be both Murtagh's and Aragorn's father. And they're related, and in the second book... Galbatorix literally, I think Murtagh gets captured or something, and forces Murtagh to basically submit to his will. There's a spell that he forces Murtagh to bind himself in, and he literally cannot violate the spell. He has to do what basically Galbatorix tells him to do, or that like he'll die, or something like that. He may be that he just literally can't deny it. And so he ends up working for Galbatorix. Yeah. Also, he's his brother. Yeah. Also, Murtagh just whatever in this whole thing. I also thought it was hilarious, like, the little cell they kept him in. Somehow, if he just pushes an Urgle into the wall, it just falls over.
Yeah. Like, I know, but he's like, I can't get out of here. Why would you do this to me?
Try kicking. It might
the
help.
The cave is on fire, and I can't escape. Oh. The bars fell out. Oops.
Oops. And now I'm going to kill Urgles and humans and get a thumbs up from the Varden. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because he fights and he shoots his arrows and he's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting up this dynamic of Murtaugh and Aragorn, and it's just so short circuit in this movie. He comes out of nowhere, shoots arrows at Durza's keep, and then leads him to the mountains of the Varden, but so quickly glossed over. That goes back to the pacing problems with this movie again, as far as how much time things take and how this movie doesn't pace things well. And then suddenly, oh, we'll lock him up, and oh no, there's a phone in the wall, and now I'm free, and I'm not going to shoot arrows. It's just, why does Aragorn trust this guy at all again? And he's known him for what, 48 hours? In the context of this movie, it's horrible.
He saved his life. That's all that Aragorn, because Aragorn being an arrogant farmer.
Yeah.
I know. It doesn't make much sense. It's not supposed to, friend. I'm sorry.
Have we finished with our fifth dislikes? Can we get out of this movie now?
Some movies can never be replaced.
I mean, this movie is one part crap and three parts more crap.
Yeah, sorry. Why don't we get to our grades then? So, Paul, what would you give this movie?
D minus.
He hates it. He hates it so much.
I do. The more I think about this movie, the more it annoys me. And not even staring at Siena Gullery and pretty Hungarian scenery can save this movie.
And dragons.
Yes, even staring at the dragons, Siena Gullery, and the Hungarian scenery can only go so far. Really.
That's hilarious, Paul. So D minus for you, Julia.
D minus.
I am going to be the outlier on this one, I think, because I think that I enjoyed this probably the best of all the torture cinema movies we've had to watch.
You are an outlier, Julia.
I have to say, like, yes, it was formulaic. It was incredibly dumb in places, but I really enjoyed watching the dragons, and I actually had fun with it, and I really enjoyed that the main female character had sensible armor. Like, so I have to say, probably a B minus.
Wow, that sensible armor really.
Like, if I had to watch any of the torture cinema movies that we've watched again, it would probably be this one.
Oh my god, I hate you so much right now. It's a terrible movie.
But I'd rather watch it again than anything else that we've watched.
Oh, you can't give it a B minus. No.
Yes, you can.
Oh, you're totally messing up the grade. I'm not going to have to give it a worse grade just to even things out.
No.
You got to give it the fair grade.
You got to give it a fair grade in isolation from hers or mine.
That's not fair.
It's not. Hey, you grade papers. You know what's fair. Be fair.
Yeah, you think I grade my papers fair. I screw my students out of all sorts of good grades. No, I'm just teasing. I don't do that. That would be unethical. But nobody will catch me. Anyway, I'm going to give this movie a D. Yeah.
So what does it get, like a C-minus then?
Well, yeah, look, I've had a lot to drink. I probably can't do math right now.
I average this out to a D plus. Because we have a D minus, a D, and a B minus. I believe that averages out to a D plus.
No, it would be closer to a C minus.
Yeah, I think it's between the two. C minus, D plus.
Because a D plus, D minus, that's a D-ish, D minus-ish, but then the B...
Between me and Julia, it would be a C minus, and then your D drags it down a little bit. So that's D plus C minus. D plus slash C minus.
I'm going to give it a D plus now, just to mess with this whole thing.
Then the average would go straight to a C minus, and that makes it simpler.
All right.
So awesome. C minus, listeners.
It's not the worst thing we've ever watched. I'll agree with you on that, Julia.
The Star Wars Holiday Special.
Well, honestly, like, no, it's not just not the worst thing we watch. I think I liked it better than anything we've had to watch for torture cinema.
I'll give you that. Yeah,
like, I was expecting. I watched this movie while, like, Moss was overnight away in New York, and I was by myself, and I was expecting that I was going to get terribly bored, and that maybe I should be drinking while I was watching it, which I wasn't doing. And I didn't, like, I was just sort of like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And then I kind of watched the whole thing and I was like, oh, actually, I didn't get that bored. It was, that was all right. Like, it was totally formulaic. It had its white little moronic farm boy saves the world thing going, but there were black people in the world. The woman had sensible armor, and I actually enjoyed it. And the dragons were freaking cool.
Okay. I'll let you have it. You can have your B minus, all right? It's not the worst thing. Maybe I'm being mean.
It was certainly not, like, I'm not going to pretend it was a good movie. It was not.
maybe I'm being too harsh.
But torture cinema has given us some horrible movies in the past.
That's true. All right, Julia's just brought me up to a C minus.
All right, I will reconsider my grade and I will give it a D plus. I'll move it up a full half grade to a D plus. So you're up to what, a C plus?
C-ish.
C. Okay, we'll call this C. So a D plus, a C, and a B minus average out to what?
Well, I'll figure it out later. Don't worry about it.
I feel like we could just call it a C and be done.
Yeah, okay. Right. We've all moved up our grades. So anyway, all right, so that's it. That we're done with this movie. So there'll be another poll about whatever. I'll put another one from the list into the thing, and hopefully people will pick one of the other four instead of the new movie we always add. And that'll be that. So look for a new poll.
And vote.
Yeah, and do vote. So, all right. So thank you guys for showing up and doing this painful thing again.
Hey, at least I didn't get too giggly this time. I just got ranty.
But you could have substituted yourself for Robert Carlyle and Michael Sheen.
Oh, God. All right,
seriously,
guys.
Like, Once Upon a Time is so worth it just for Robert Carlyle being like, ha ha ha, dearie, ha ha.
I should write a skit where you get to play Robert Carlyle. That would be amazing. All right, let's end this thing. So, all right, we'll see everybody next week.
Good night, listeners.
Bye.
Bye.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.